take into account that I come from an Enlightenment culture? Or were these other potential Dark Lords the children of spoiled Dark Age nobility, who didn't know squat about the historical lessons of how Lenin and Hitler actually turned out? Or about the evolutionary psychology of self-delusion? Or the value of self-awareness and rationality? Or... No, of course they were not in this new reference class, which you have just now constructed in such a way as to contain only yourself. And, of course, others have pleaded their own exceptionalism, just as you are doing now. But why is it necessary? Do you think that you are the last potential wizard of light in the world? Why must you be the one to try for greatness, when I have advised you that you are riskier than average? Let some other, safer candidate try. But the prophecy... You don't really know that there's a prophecy. It was originally a wild guess on your part. Or, to be more precise, a wild joke. And McGonagall could have been reacting only to the part about the Dark Lord still being alive. You have essentially no idea of what the prophecy says, or even if there is one. You're just speculating. Or, to put it more exactly, wishing that you have some ready-made heroic role that is your personal property. But even if there is no prophecy, I'm the one who defeated him last time. That was almost certainly a wild fluke, unless you seriously believe that a one-year-old child had an inherent propensity to defeat Dark Lords which has been maintained 10 years later. None of this is your real reason, and you know it.
The answer to this was something that Harry would not regularly have said out loud. In conversation, he would have danced around it and found some more socially palatable arguments to the same conclusion.
You think that you are potentially the greatest who has yet lived, the strongest servant of the light, that no other is likely to take up your wand if you lay it down. Well, yeah, frankly. I don't usually come out and say it like that, but yeah. No point in softening it. You can read my mind anyway. To the extent you really believe that, you must equally believe that you could be the most terrible Dark Lord the world has ever known. Destruction is always easier than creation. Easier to tear things apart, to disrupt, than to put them back together again. If I have the potential to accomplish good on a massive scale, I must also have the potential to accomplish still greater evil. But I won't do that. Already you insist on risking it. Why are you so driven? What is the real reason you must not go to Hufflepuff and be happier there? What is your true fear? I must achieve my full potential. If I don't, I fail. What happens if you fail? Something terrible. What happens if you fail? I don't know. Then it shouldn't be frightening. What happens if you fail? I don't know, but I know that it's bad.
There was silence for a moment in the caverns of Harry's mind.
You know, you aren't letting yourself think it. But in some quiet corner of your mind, you know just exactly what you aren't thinking. You know that by far the simplest explanation for this unverbalizable fear of yours is just the fear of losing your fantasy of greatness, of disappointing the people who believe in you, of turning out to be pretty much ordinary, of flashing and fading like so many other child prodigies. No,
Harry thought desperately.
No, it's something more. It comes from somewhere else. I know there's something out there to be afraid of, some disaster I have to stop. How could you possibly know about something like that?
Harry screamed it with the full power of his mind.
No! And that's final!
Then the voice of the Sorting Hat came slowly.
So, you will risk becoming a Dark Lord, because the alternative to you is certain failure, and that failure means the loss of everything. You believe that in your heart of hearts. You know all the reasons for doubting this belief, and they have failed to move you. Yes, and even if going to Ravenclaw strengthens the coldness, that doesn't mean the coldness will win in the end. This day is a great fork in your destiny. Don't be so sure that there will be other choices beyond this one. There is no road sign set to mark the place of your last chance to turn back. If you refuse one chance, will you not refuse others? It may be that your fate is already sealed, even by doing this one thing. But that is not certain. That you do not know it for a certainty may reflect only your own ignorance. But still, it is not certain.
The Hat sighed a terrible, sad sigh.
And so, before too long, you will become another memory, to be felt and never known in the next warning that I give. If that's how it seems to you, then why aren't you just putting me where you want me to go?
The Hat's thought was laced with sorrow.
I can only put you where you belong, and only your own decisions can change where you belong. Then, this is done. Send me to Ravenclaw where I belong, with the others of my own kind. I don't suppose you would consider Gryffindor. It's the most prestigious house. People probably expect it of you. Even they'll be a little disappointed if you don't go. And your new friends, the Weasley twins, are there.
Harry giggled, or felt the impulse to do so. It came out as purely mental laughter, an odd sensation. Apparently, there were safeguards to prevent you from saying anything out loud by accident while you were under the Hat, talking about things you would never tell another soul for the rest of your life. After a moment, Harry heard the Hat laughing too. A strange, sad, clothy sound. And in the hall beyond, a silence that had grown shallower at first as the background whispers increased, and then deepened as the whispers gave up and died away, falling finally into an utter silence that no one dared disturb with a single word, as Harry stayed under the hat for long, long minutes, longer than all the previous first years put together, longer than anyone in living memory. At the head table, Dumbledore went on smiling benignly. Small metallic sounds occasionally came from Snape's direction as he idly compacted the twisted remains of what had once been a heavy silver wine goblet. And Minerva McGonagall clenched the podium in a white-knuckled grip, knowing that Harry Potter's contagious chaos had somehow infected the Sorting Hat itself, and the Hat was about to demand that a whole new House of Doom be created just to accommodate Harry Potter or something. And Dumbledore would make her do it! Beneath the brim of the hat, the silent laughter died away. Harry felt sad, too, for some reason. No, not Gryffindor.
"Professor McGonagall said that if the one who did the sorting tried to push me into Gryffindor, I was to remind you that she might well be headmistress some day, at which point she would have the authority to set you on fire." "Tell her I called her an impudent youngster and told her to get off my lawn." "I shall. So, was this your strangest conversation ever?" "Not even close."
The Hat's telepathic voice grew heavy.
"Well, I gave you every possible chance to make another decision. Now it's time for you to go where you belong, with the others of your own kind."
There was a pause that stretched.
"What are you waiting for?" "I was hoping for a moment of horrified realization, actually. Self-awareness does seem to enhance my sense of humor." "Huh?"
Harry cast back his thoughts, trying to figure out what the Hat could possibly be talking about. And then, suddenly, he realized. He couldn't believe he'd managed to overlook it up until this point.
"You mean my horrified realization that you're going to cease to be conscious once you finish sorting me?"
Somehow, in some fashion, Harry entirely failed to understand. He got a non-verbal impression of a hat banging its head against the wall.
"I give up! You're too slow on the uptake for this to be funny. So blinded by your own assumptions that you might as well be a rock. I suppose I'll just have to say it outright."
Too slow?
"Oh! And you entirely forgot to demand the secrets of the lost magic that created me. And they were such wonderful, important secrets, too." "You sly little. You deserved it. And this as well."
Harry saw it coming, just as it was already too late. The frightened silence of the hall was broken by a single word.
"Slytherin!"
Some students screamed. The pent-up tension was so great. People startled hard enough to fall off their benches. Hagrid gasped in horror. McGonagall staggered at the podium, and Snape dropped the remains of his heavy silver goblet directly onto his groin. Harry sat there frozen, his life in ruins, feeling the absolute fool and wishing wretchedly that he had made any other choices for any other reasons but the ones he had. That he had done something, anything differently before it had been too late to turn back. As the first moment of shock was wearing off and people began to react to the news, the Sorting Hat spoke again.
"Just kidding! Ravenclaw!"
There is no Chapter 11. Onwards.
Chapter 12. Impulse Control.
"Wonder what's wrong with him?"
"Turpin Leaser!"
Whisper, whisper, whisper. Harry Potter, whisper, whisper, whisper. Slytherin, whisper, whisper. No, seriously, what the hell? Whisper, whisper.
"Ravenclaw!"
Harry joined in the applause, greeting the young girl walking shyly towards the Ravenclaw table. Her robe's trim now changed to dark blue. Lisa Turpin appeared torn between her impulse to sit down as far away from Harry Potter as possible, and her impulse to run over, forcibly insert herself at his side and start tearing answers out of him. Being at the centre of an extraordinary and curious event, and then being sorted into House Ravenclaw, was closely akin to being dipped in barbecue sauce and flung into a pit of starving kittens.
"I promised the Sorting Hat not to talk about it," whispered Harry for the umpteenth time. "Yes, really? No, I really did promise the Sorting Hat not to talk about it. Fine, I promised the Sorting Hat not to talk about most of it, and the rest is private, just like yours was, so stop asking. You want to know what happened? Fine. Here's part of what happened. I told the Hat that Professor McGonagall threatened to set it on fire, and it told me to tell Professor McGonagall that she was an impudent youngster and she should get off its lawn. If you're not going to believe what I say, then why are you even asking? No, I don't know how I defeated the Dark Lord either. You tell me if you figure it out."
"It's silence!"
shouted Professor McGonagall at the podium of the head table.
"No talking until the sorting ceremony finishes."
There was a brief dip in the volume as everyone waited to see if she was going to make any specific and credible threats, and then the whispers started up again. Then the silver-bearded ancient stood up from his great golden chair, smiling cheerfully. Instant silence. Someone frantically elbowed Harry as he tried to continue a whisper, and Harry cut himself off in mid-sentence. The cheerful-looking old man sat down again.
"Note to self, do not mess with Dumbledore."
Harry was still trying to process everything that had happened during the incident with the Sorting Hat, not the least of which was what had happened the instant Harry had lifted the hat off his head. In that moment, he'd heard a tiny whisper, as though from nowhere, something that sounded oddly like English and a hiss at the same time. Something that had said,
"Salutations from Slytherin to Slytherin. If you would seek my secrets, speak to my snake."
Harry was sort of guessing that wasn't supposed to be part of the official sorting process, and that it was a bit of extra magic set down by Salazar Slytherin during the making of the hat. And that the hat itself didn't know about it, and that it was triggered when the hat said, "Slytherin," plus or minus some other conditions, and that a Ravenclaw like himself really, really wasn't supposed to have heard it. And that if he could find some reliable way of swearing Draco to secrecy, so he could ask him about it, that would be an excellent time to have some comma tea handy.
Boy, you resolve not to go down the path of a Dark Lord, and the universe starts messing with you the instant the hat comes off your head. Some days it just doesn't pay to fight destiny. Maybe I'll wait until tomorrow to start on my resolution to not be a Dark Lord.
Gryffindor!
Ron Weasley got a lot of applause, and not just from the Gryffindors. Apparently, the Weasley family was widely liked around here. Harry, after a moment, smiled and started applauding along with the others. Then again, there was no time like today to turn back from the dark side. Stuff destiny and stuff the universe. It'd show that hat.
The meanie boys.
Pause.
Slytherin!
Shouted the hat. Harry applauded Sabini too, ignoring the odd looks he was getting from everyone, including Sabini. No other name was called out after that, and Harry realized that Sabini Blaze did sound close to the end of the alphabet. Great, so now he'd only applauded Sabini. Oh well. Dumbledore got up again and began heading towards the podium. Apparently, they were about to be treated to a speech. And Harry was struck by the inspiration for a brilliant experimental test. Hermione had said that Dumbledore was the most powerful wizard alive, right? Harry reached into his pouch and whispered,
"Comma tea."
For the comma tea to work, it would have to make Dumbledore say something so ridiculous during his speech that even in Harry's state of mental preparedness, he would still choke. Like, all the Hogwarts students had to not wear any clothes for the whole school year, or everyone was going to be transformed into cats. But then, if anyone in the world could resist the power of comma tea, it would be Dumbledore. So, if this worked, the comma tea was literally invincible. Harry pulled the ring on the comma tea under the table, wanting to do this a bit unobtrusively. The can made a quiet hissing noise. A few heads turned to look at him, but soon turned back as,
"Welcome, welcome to a new year at Hogwarts,"
said Dumbledore, beaming at the students with his arms opened wide, as if nothing could have pleased him more than to see them all there. Harry took a first mouthful of comma tea and lowered the can again. He would swallow the pop a little at a time and try not to choke, no matter what Dumbledore said.
"Before we begin our banquet, I would like to say a few words, and here they are. Happy, happy, boom, boom, swamp, swamp, swamp. Thank you."
Everyone clapped and cheered, and Dumbledore sat down again. Harry sat frozen as pop trickled out of the corners of his mouth. He had, at least, managed to choke quietly. He really, really, really shouldn't have done that. Amazing how much more obvious that became 1 second after it was too late. In retrospect, he probably should have noticed something wrong when he was thinking about everyone being turned into cats. Or even before then, remembered his mental note not to mess with Dumbledore, or his newfound resolution to be more considerate of others. Or maybe if he'd had one single scrap of common sense. It was hopeless. He was corrupt to the core. Hail the Dark Lord Harry! You couldn't fight fate. Someone was asking Harry if he was all right. Others were starting to serve themselves food, which had magically appeared on the table. Whatever.
I'm all right, Harry said. Excuse me. Was that a normal speech for the headmaster? You all didn't seem very surprised.
Oh, Dumbledore's insane, of course,
said an older-looking Ravenclaw sitting next to him, who had introduced himself with some name Harry didn't even begin to remember.
Lots of fun. Incredibly powerful wizard, but completely bonkers.
He paused.
At some later point, I'd also like to ask why green fluid came out of your lips and then disappeared, though I expect you promised the Sorting Hat not to talk about that either.
With a great effort, Harry stopped himself from glancing down at the incriminating can of Comet Tea in his hand. After all, the Comet Tea hadn't just arbitrarily materialized a Quibbler headline about him and Draco. Draco had explained it in a way that made it seem like it had all happened naturally, as if it had altered history to fit. Harry was mentally imagining himself banging his forehead against the table. Wham! 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 Went his head within his mind. Another student lowered her voice to a whisper.
I hear that Dumbledore is secretly a genius mastermind controlling lots of stuff, and he uses the insanity as a cover so that no one will suspect him.
I've heard that too,
whispered a third student, and there were furtive nods from around the table. This couldn't help but catch Harry's attention.
I see, whispered Harry, lowering his own voice. So, everyone knows that Dumbledore is secretly a mastermind.
Most of the students nodded. One or two looked suddenly thoughtful, including the older student sitting next to Harry.
Are you sure this is the Ravenclaw table?
Harry managed not to ask out loud.
Brilliant, Harry whispered. If everyone knows, no one will suspect it's a secret.
Exactly,
whispered a student, and then he frowned.
Wait, it doesn't quite sound right.
Note to self, the 75th percentile of Hogwarts students, a.k.a. Ravenclaw House, is not the world's most exclusive program for gifted children.
But at least he learned an important fact today. The committee was omnipotent. And that meant... Harry blinked in surprise as his mind finally made the obvious connection. That meant that as soon as he learned a spell to temporarily alter his own sense of humour, he could make anything happen by making it so that he would only find that one thing surprising enough to do a spit take, and then drinking a can of Comet Tea.
Well, that was a short little journey to godhood. Even I expected this to take longer than my first day of school.
Come to think of it, he'd also completely wrecked Hogwarts within 10 minutes flat of getting sorted. Harry did feel a certain amount of regret about this. Merlin knew what an insane headmaster was going to do to his next 7 years of schooling, but he couldn't help feeling a twinge of pride, too. Tomorrow, no later than tomorrow, at the very latest, he was going to stop walking down the path that led to Dark Lord Harry. A prospect which was sounding scarier by the minute. and yet also somehow increasingly attractive. Part of his mind was already visualizing the minions' uniforms. Eat. The older student sitting next to him growled and jabbed Harry in the ribs. Don't think. Eat. Harry automatically started loading up his plate with whatever was in front of him. Blue sausages with tiny glowing bits. Whatever.
What were you thinking about this odd thing?
Began to say Padma Patil, one of the other first-year Ravenclaws.
No pestering during mealtimes!
Chorused at least three people.
House rule!
Added another.
Otherwise, we'd all starve around here.
Harry was finding himself really, really hoping that his clever new idea didn't actually work, and that the comedy worked some other way and didn't actually have the omnipotent power to alter reality. It wasn't that he didn't want it to be omnipotent. It was that he just couldn't bear the thought of living in a universe that really worked like that. There was something undignified about ascending through the clever use of fizzy drinks. But he was going to test it experimentally.
You know, said the older student next to him in a quite pleasant tone, we have a system for forcing people like you to eat. Would you like to find out what it is?
Harry gave up and started eating his blue sausage. It was quite good, especially the glowing bits. Dinner passed with surprising rapidity. Harry tried to sample at least a little bit of all the weird new foods he saw. His curiosity couldn't stand the thought of not knowing how something tasted. Thank goodness this wasn't a restaurant where you had to order only one thing and you never found out what all the other things on the menu tasted like. Harry hated that. It was like a torture chamber for anyone with a spark of curiosity.
Find out about only one of the mysteries on this list. Ha ha ha!
Then it was time for dessert, which Harry had completely forgotten to leave room for. He gave up after sampling a small bit of treacle tart. Surely all these things would pass around at least once again over the course of the school year? So, what was on his to-do list besides the ordinary school things?
To-do one. Research mind alteration charms so you can test the comity and see whether you actually did figure out a path to omnipotence. Actually, just research every kind of mind magic you can find. Mind is the foundation of our power as humans. Any kind of magic that affects it is the most important sort of magic there is. To do two. Actually, this is to do one, and the other is to do two. Go through the bookshelves of the Hogwarts and Ravenclaw libraries, familiarizing yourself with the system and making sure you've at least read all the book titles. Second pass, read all tables of contents. Coordinate with Hermione, who has a much better memory than you. Find out if there's an interlibrary loan system at Hogwarts, and see if the two of you, especially Hermione, can visit those libraries too. If the other houses have private libraries, figure out how to access legally or sneak in. Option 3A, swear Hermione to secrecy and try to start researching from Slytherin to Slytherin. If you would seek my secrets, speak to my snake. Problem. This sounds highly confidential, and it could take quite a while to randomly run across a book containing a hint. To do zero. Check out what sort of information, search and retrieval spells exist, if any. Library magic isn't as ultimately important as mind magic, but it has a much higher priority. Option 3B. Look for a spell to magically bind Draco Malfoy to secrecy, or magically verify the sincerity of Draco's promise to keep a secret. Veritaserum? And then ask him about Slytherin's message.
Actually, Harry had a pretty bad feeling about option 3B. Now that Harry thought about it, he didn't feel all that great about option 3A either. Harry's thoughts flashed back to possibly the worst moment of his life to date, those long seconds of blood-freezing horror beneath the hat, when he thought he had already failed. He had wished then to fall back just a few minutes in time and change something, anything, before it was too late. And then it had turned out to not be too late after all. A wish granted. You couldn't change history, but you could get it right to start with. Do something differently the first time around. This whole business with seeking Slytherin's secrets seemed an awful lot like the sort of thing where, years later, you'd look back and say, "And that was where it all started going wrong." And he would wish desperately for the ability to fall back through time and make a different choice. Wish granted. Now what? Harry slowly smiled. It was a rather counterintuitive thought, but he could. There was no rule saying he couldn't. He could just pretend he'd never heard that little whisper. Let the universe go on in exactly the same way it would have if that one critical moment had never occurred. 20 years later, that was what he would desperately wish had happened 20 years ago, and 20 years before, 20 years later, happened to be right now. Altering the distant past was easy. You just had to think of it at the right time. Or, this was even more counterintuitive, he could even inform, say, Professor McGonagall, instead of Draco or Hermione. And she could get a few good people together and get that little extra spell taken off the hat. Why, yes, that sounded like a remarkably good idea once Harry had actually thought of it. So very obvious in retrospect, and yet somehow option 3C and option 3D just hadn't occurred to him. Harry awarded himself +1 point on his anti-Dark Lord Harry program. It had been an awfully cruel prank the hat had played on him, but you couldn't argue with the results on consequentialist grounds. It certainly did give him a better idea of the victim's perspective, though. To-do 4. Apologize to Neville Longbottom. Okay, he was on a roll here. Now he just had to keep it up. In every day, in every way, I'm getting lighter and lighter. People around Harry had also mostly stopped eating at this point, and the dessert serving dishes began to vanish, and the used plates. When all the plates were gone, Dumbledore once again stood up from his seat. Harry couldn't help but feel the urge to drink another comma tea.
"You've got to be kidding," Harry thought at that piece of himself.
But the experiment didn't count if it wasn't replicated, did it? And the damage was already done, wasn't it? Didn't he want to see what would happen this time? Wasn't he curious? What if he got a different result?
Hey, I bet you're the same part of my brain that pushed through the prank on Neville Longbottom.
Maybe?
And is it not overwhelmingly obvious that if I do this, I shall regret it 1 second after it's too late? Yeah, so, no?
Said Dumbledore from the podium, stroking his long silver beard.
Just a few more words, now that we are all fed and watered. I have a few start-of-term notices to give you. First year should note that the forest on the grounds is forbidden to all pupils. That is why it is called the Forbidden Forest. If it were permitted, it would be called the Permitted Forest.
Straightforward.
Note to self, Forbidden Forest is forbidden.
I have also been asked by Mr. Filch, the caretaker, to remind you all that no magic should be used between classes in the corridors. Alas, we all know that what should be and what is are two different things. Thank you for keeping this in mind. Quidditch trials will be held in the second week of the term. Anyone interested in playing for their house teams should contact Madame Hooch. Anyone interested in reformulating the entire game of Quidditch should contact Harry Potter.
Harry inhaled his own saliva and went into a coughing fit just as all eyes turned toward him. How the hell? He hadn't met Dumbledore's eyes at any point. He didn't think. He certainly hadn't been thinking about Quidditch at the time. He hadn't talked to anyone but Ron Weasley, and he didn't think Ron would have told anyone else. Or had Ron run off to a professor to complain? How on earth?
Additionally, I must tell you that this year, the third floor corridor on the right-hand side is out of bounds to everyone who does not wish to die a very painful death. It is guarded by an elaborate series of dangerous and potentially lethal traps, and you cannot possibly get past all of them, especially if you are only in your first year.
Harry was numb at this point.
And finally, I extend my greatest thanks to Quirinus Quirrell for heroically agreeing to undertake the position of defense against the dark arts professor at Hogwarts.
Dumbledore's gaze moved searchingly across the students.
I hope all students will extend Professor Quirrell that utmost courtesy and tolerance which is due his extraordinary service to you and this school, and that you will not pester us with any niggling complaints about him, unless you want to try doing his job.
What was that about?
I now yield the floor to our new faculty member, Professor Quirrell, who would like to say a few words.
The young, thin, nervous man who Harry had first met in the Leaky Cauldron slowly made his way to the podium, glancing fearfully around in all directions. Harry caught a glimpse of the back of his head, and it looked like Professor Quirrell might already be going bald, despite his seeming youth.
"Wonder what's wrong with him?"
whispered the older-looking student sitting next to Harry. similar hushed comments were being exchanged elsewhere along the table. Professor Quirrell made his way up to the podium and stood there, blinking. He said. Then his courage seemed to fail him utterly, and he stood there in silence, occasionally twitching. "Oh, great," whispered the older student. "Looks like another long year in defense class."
"Salutations, my young apprentices," Professor Quirrell said in a dry, confident tone. "We all know that Hogwarts tends to suffer a certain misfortune in its selections for this position, and no doubt many of you are already wondering what doom shall befall me this year. I assure you that doom is not to be my incompetence."
He smiled thinly.
"Believe it or not, I have long wished to some day try my hand as the Professor of Defense Against the Dark Arts here at the Hogwarts School of Witchcraft and Wizardry. The first to teach this class was Salazar Slytherin himself, and as late as the 14th century, it was traditional for the greatest fighting wizards of every persuasion to try their hands at teaching here. Past professors of defense have included not just the legendary wandering hero Harold Shear, but also the quote, undying, unquote, Baba Yaga. Yes, I see some of you are still shuddering at the sound of her name, even though she's been dead for 600 years. That must have been an interesting time to attend Hogwarts, don't you think?"
Harry was swallowing hard, trying to suppress the sudden surge of emotion that had overcome him when Professor Quirrell had begun speaking. The precise tones reminded him very much of a lecturer at Oxford, and it was starting to hit home that Harry wasn't going to see his home, or his mum and dad, until Christmas.
"You are accustomed to the defense position being filled by incompetence, scoundrels, and the unlucky. To anyone with a sense of history, it bears another reputation entirely. Not everyone who teaches here has been the best, but the best have all taught at Hogwarts. In such august company, and after so much time anticipating this day, I would be ashamed to set myself any standard lower than perfection. And so, I do intend that every one of you will always remember this year as the best defense class that you have ever had. What you learn this year will forever serve as your firm foundation in the arts of defense, no matter who your teachers before and after."
Professor Quirrell's expression grew serious.
"We have a great deal of lost ground to make up and not much time to cover it. Therefore, I intend to depart from Hogwarts teaching conventions in a number of respects, as well as introducing some optional after-school activities."
He paused.
"If that is not sufficient, perhaps I can find new ways to motivate you. You are my long-awaited students, and you will do your very best in my long-awaited defense class.
I would add some sort of dreadful threat, like, otherwise you will suffer horribly. But that would be so cliché, don't you think? I pride myself on being more imaginative than that. Thank you. Then, the vigour and confidence seemed to drain away from Professor Quirrell. His mouth gaped open as if he had suddenly found himself facing an unexpected audience, and he turned with a conclusive jerk and shuffled back to his seat, hunched over as if he was about to collapse in on himself and implode.
"He seems a little odd," whispered Harry.
"Meh," said the older-looking student. "You ain't seen nothing."
Dumbledore resumed the podium.
"And now," said Dumbledore, "before we go to bed, let us sing the school song. Everyone pick their favourite tune and favourite words, and off we go."
Chapter 13. Asking the Wrong Questions.
"That's one of the most obvious riddles I've ever heard."
As soon as Harry opened his eyes in the Ravenclaw first-year boys' dormitory on the morning of his first full day at Hogwarts, he knew something was wrong. It was quiet. Too quiet. Ah, right. There was a quietus charm on his bed's headboard, controlled by a small slider bar, which was the only reason it was ever possible for anyone to go to sleep in Ravenclaw. Harry sat up and looked around, expecting to see others rising for the day. The dorm, empty. The beds, rumpled and unmade. The sun, coming in at a rather high angle. His quieter turned all the way up to maximum, and his mechanical alarm clock was still running, but the alarm was turned off. He'd been allowed to sleep until 9:52 a.m., apparently. Despite his best efforts to synchronize his 26-hour sleep cycle to his arrival at Hogwarts, he hadn't gotten to sleep last night until around 1 a.m. He'd been planning to wake up at 7 a.m. with the other students. He could stand being a little sleep-deprived his first day, so long as he got some sort of magical fix before tomorrow. But now he had missed breakfast. And his very first class at Hogwarts, in Herbology, had started 1 hour and 22 minutes ago. The anger was slowly, slowly wakening in him. Oh, what a nice little prank! Turn off his alarm, turn up the quieter, and let Mr. Big Shot Harry Potter miss his first class, and be blamed for being a heavy sleeper. When Harry found out who'd done this... No, this could only have been done with the cooperation of all 12 other boys in the Ravenclaw dorm. All of them would have seen his sleeping form. All of them had let him sleep through breakfast. The anger drained away, replaced by confusion and a horribly wounded feeling. He'd thought... Last night he'd thought... They liked him. Why? As Harry stepped out of the bed, he saw a piece of paper facing out from his headboard. The paper said,
"My fellow Ravenclaws, it's been an extra long day. Please let me sleep in and don't worry about my missing breakfast. I haven't forgotten about my first class.
Yours, Harry Potter.
And Harry stood there, frozen, ice water beginning to trickle through his veins. The paper was in his own handwriting, in his own mechanical pencil, and he didn't remember writing it. And, Harry squinted at the piece of paper, and unless he was imagining it, the words, "I haven't forgotten," were written in a different style, as if he was trying to tell himself something. Had he known he was going to be obliviated? Had he stayed up late, committed some sort of crime or covert activity, and then... But he didn't know the obliviate spell. Had someone else... What? A thought occurred to Harry. If he had known he was going to be obliviated... Still in his pajamas, Harry ran around his bed to his trunk, pressed his thumb against the lock, pulled out his pouch, stuck his hand in, and said, "Note to myself!" And another piece of paper popped into his hand. Harry took it out, staring at it. It, too, was in his own handwriting. The note said,
"Dear me, please play the game. You can only play the game once in a lifetime. This is an irreplaceable opportunity. Recognition code 927. I am a potato. Yours, you."
Harry nodded slowly. Recognition code 927, "I am a potato," was indeed the message he had worked out in advance, some years earlier, while watching TV, that only he would know, if he had to identify a duplicate of himself as being really him, or something. Just in case. Be prepared. Harry couldn't trust the message. There might be other spells involved. But it ruled out any simple prank. He had definitely written this, and he definitely didn't remember writing it. Staring at the paper, Harry became aware of ink showing through from the other side. He flipped it over. The reverse side read,
"Instructions for the game. You do not know the rules of the game. You do not know the stakes of the game. You do not know the objective of the game. You do not know who controls the game. You do not know how to end the game. You start with 100 points. Begin."
Harry stared at the instructions. This side wasn't handwritten. The writing was perfectly regular, hence artificial. It looked as if it had been inscribed by a quotes quill, such as the one he'd bought to take dictation. He had absolutely no clue what was going on. Well, step one was to get dressed and eat. Maybe reverse that order. His stomach felt rather empty. He'd missed breakfast, of course, but he was prepared for that eventuality, having visualized it in advance. Harry put his hand into his pouch and said, "Snack bars!" expecting to get the box of cereal bars he'd bought before departing for Hogwarts. What popped up did not feel like a box of cereal bars. When Harry brought his hand into his field of vision, he saw two tiny candy bars, not nearly enough for a meal, attached to a note, and the note was inscribed, in the same writing as the game instructions. The note said,
"Attempt failed. -1 point. Current points, 99. Physical state, still hungry. Mental state, confused."
Yeah.
Harry's mouth said, without any sort of conscious intervention or decision on his part. He stood there for around a minute. 1 minute later, it still didn't make any sense, and he still had absolutely no idea what was going on, and his brain hadn't even begun to grasp at any hypotheses, like his mental hands were encased in rubber balls and couldn't pick anything up. His stomach, which had its own priorities, suggested a possible experimental probe.
"Ah," Harry said to the empty room, "I don't suppose I could spend a point and get my box of cereal bars back?"
There was only silence. Harry put his hand into the pouch and said,
"Box of cereal bars."
A box that felt like the right shape popped up into his hand, but it was too light, and it was open, and it was empty, and the note attached to it said,
"Points spent, 1. Current points, 98. You have gained a box of cereal bars."
"I'd like to spend 1 point and get the actual cereal bars back," said Harry.
Again, silence. Harry put his hand into the pouch and said,
"Cereal bars."
Nothing came up. Harry shrugged despairingly and went over to the cabinet he'd been given near his bed to get his wizard's robes for the day. On the floor of the cabinet, under his robes, were the cereal bars and a note.
"Points spent, 1. Current points, 97. You have gained 6 cereal bars. You are still wearing pajamas. Do not eat while you are wearing your pajamas. You will get a pajama penalty."
"And now I know that whoever controls the game is insane. My guess is that the game is controlled by Dumbledore,"
Harry said out loud. Maybe this time he could set a new land speed record for being quick on the uptake. Silence. But Harry was starting to pick up the pattern. The note would be in the next place he looked. So Harry looked under his bed.
"Dumbledore does not control the game. Bad guess. Very bad guess. Minus 20 points. You are still wearing pajamas. It is your 4th move and you are still wearing pajamas. Pajama penalty, minus 2 points. Current points, 75.
Welp, that was a puzzler, all right. It was only his first day at school, and once you ruled out Dumbledore, he didn't know the name of anyone else here who was this crazy. His body more or less on autopilot, Harry gathered up a set of robes and underwear, pulled out the cavern level of his trunk. He was a very private sort of person, and someone might walk into the dorm. Got dressed, and then went back upstairs to put away his pajamas. Harry paused before pulling out the cabinet drawer that held his pajamas. If the pattern here held true...
"How can I earn more points?" Harry said out loud.
Then he pulled out the drawer.
"Opportunities to do good are everywhere, but darkness is where the light needs to be. Cost of question, 1 point. Current points, 74. Nice underwear. Did your mother pick them out?"
Harry crushed the note in his hand, face flaming scarlet. Draco's curse came back to him.
"Son of a mudblood!"
At this point, he knew better than to say it out loud. He would probably get a profanity penalty. Harry girded himself with his moke-skin pouch and wand. He peeled off the wrapper off one of his cereal bars and threw it into the room's rubbish bin, where it landed atop a mostly uneaten chocolate frog, a crumpled envelope, and some green and red wrapping paper. He put the other cereal bars into his moke-skin pouch. He looked around in a final, desperate, and ultimately futile search for clues. And then Harry left the dorm, eating as he went, in search of the Slytherin dungeons. At least, that's what he thought the line was about. Trying to navigate the halls of Hogwarts was, like, probably not quite as bad as wandering around inside an Escher painting. That was the sort of thing you said for rhetorical effect, rather than for its being true. A short time later, Harry was thinking that, in fact, an Escher painting would have both pluses and minuses compared to Hogwarts. Minuses: no consistent gravitational orientation. Pluses: at least the stairs wouldn't move around while you were still on them. Harry had originally climbed 4 flights of stairs to get to his dorm. After clambering down no fewer than 12 flights of stairs without getting anywhere near the dungeons, Harry concluded that, 1, an Escher painting would be a cakewalk by comparison. 2, he was somehow higher in the castle than when he'd started. And 3, he was so thoroughly lost that he wouldn't have been surprised to look out of the next window and see 2 moons in the sky. Backup plan A had been to stop and ask for directions, but there seemed to be an extreme lack of people wandering around. As if the beggars were all attending class the way they were supposed to or something. Backup plan B. "I'm lost," Harry said out loud. "Can, the spirit of Hogwarts Castle help me? Or something?"
"I don't think this castle has a spirit,"
observed a wizened old lady in one of the paintings on the walls.
"Life, perhaps, but not spirit."
There was a brief pause.
"Are you..."
Harry said, and then shut his mouth. On second thought, no, he was not going to ask the painting whether it was fully conscious in the sense of being aware of its own awareness.
"I'm Harry Potter,"
said his mouth, more or less on autopilot. Also, more or less automatically, Harry stuck out his hand towards the painting. The woman in the painting looked down at Harry's hand and raised her eyebrows. Slowly, the hand dropped back to Harry's side.
Sorry, Harry said. "I'm sort of new here."
"So I perceive, young Raven. Where are you trying to go?"
Harry hesitated.
"I'm not really sure," he said.
"Then perhaps you are already there."
"Well, wherever I am trying to go, I don't think this is it."
Harry shut his mouth, aware of just how much he was sounding like an idiot.
"Let me start over. I'm playing this game, only I don't know what the rules are."
That didn't really work either, did it?
"Okay, third try. I'm looking for opportunities to do good so I can score points, and all I have is this cryptic hint about how darkness is where the light needs to be, so I was trying to go down, but I seem to keep going up instead."
The old lady in the painting was looking at him rather skeptically. Harry sighed.
My life tends to get a bit peculiar.
Would it be fair to say that you don't know where you're going, or why you're trying to get there?
Entirely fair.
The old lady nodded.
I'm not sure that being lost is your most important problem, young man.
True, but unlike the more important problems, it's a problem I can understand how to solve and... Wow, is this conversation turning into a metaphor for human existence? I didn't even realize that was happening until just now.
The lady eyed Harry appraisingly.
You are a fine young raven, aren't you? For a moment, I was starting to wonder. Well then, as a general rule, if you keep on turning left, you're bound to keep going down.
That sounded strangely familiar, but Harry couldn't recall where he'd heard it before.
You seem like a very intelligent person. Or a picture of a very intelligent person, anyway. Have you heard of a mysterious game where you can only play once and they won't tell you the rules?
Live,
said the lady at once.
That's the most obvious riddle I've ever heard.
Harry blinked.
No,
he said slowly.
I mean, I've got an actual note and everything saying that I had to play the game, but I wouldn't be told the rules, and someone is leaving me little slips of paper telling me how many points I've lost for violating the rules, like a -2 point penalty for wearing pyjamas. Do you know anyone here at Hogwarts who's crazy enough and powerful enough to do something like that? Besides Dumbledore, I mean.
The picture of a lady sighed.
I'm only a picture, young man. I remember Hogwarts as it was, not Hogwarts as it is. All I can tell you is that if this were a riddle, the answer would be that the game is life, and that while we do not make all the rules ourselves, the one who awards or takes points is always you. If it is not riddle, but reality, then I do not know.
Harry bowed very low to the picture.
Thank you, milady.
The lady curtsied to him.
I wish I could say that I'll remember you with fondness,
she said.
But I probably won't remember you at all. Farewell, Harry Potter.
He bowed again in reply, and started to climb down the nearest flight of stairs. 4 left turns later, he found himself staring down a corridor that ended, abruptly, in a tumbled mound of large rocks, as if there had been a cave-in. Only the surrounding walls and ceiling were intact and made of quite regular castle stones.
All right, Harry said to the empty air. I give up. I'm asking for another hint. How do I get to where I need to go?
A hint? A hint, you say?
The excited voice came from a painting on the wall not far away. This one, a portrait of a middle-aged man in the loudest pink robes that Harry had ever seen or even imagined. In the portrait, he was wearing a droopy old pointed hat with a fish on it. Not a drawing of a fish, mind, but a fish.
Yes! Harry said. A hint, I say. Only not just any hint, I'm looking for a specific hint. It's for a game I'm playing.
Yes, a hint for the game. You're Harry Potter, aren't you? I am Cornelian Flubberwalt.
I was told by Erin the Consort, who was told by Lord Weaselnose, who was told by... I forget, really. But it was a message for me to give to you, for me. No one's cared about me, you know. I don't know how long. Maybe ever. I've been stuck down here in this bloody useless old corridor. A hint. I have your hint. It will only cost you 3 points. Do you want it?
Yes, I want it.
Harry was aware that he probably ought to keep his sarcasm under control, but he just couldn't seem to help himself.
The darkness can be found between the Green Study Rooms and McGonagall's Transfiguration Class. That's the hint. And get a move on. You're slower than a sack of snails. -10 points for being slow. Now you've got 61 points. That was the rest of the message.
Thank you,
Harry said. He was really getting behind on the game here.
I don't suppose you know where the message originally came from, do you?
It was spoken by a hollow voice that belled forth from a gap in the air itself. A gap that opened upon a fiery abyss. That's what they told me.
Harry was no longer sure, at this point, whether this was the sort of thing he ought to be sceptical about, or the sort of thing he should just take in his stride.
And how can I find the line between the Green Study Rooms and Transfiguration Class?
Just spin back around and go left, right, down, down, right, left, right, up, and left again. You'll be at the Green Study Room, and if you go in and walk straight out the opposite side, you'll be in a big curvy corridor that goes to an intersection, and on the right side of that intersection will be a long straight hallway that goes to the Transfiguration Classroom.
The figure of the middle-aged man paused.
At least that's how it was when I was in Hogwarts. This is a Monday on an odd-numbered year, isn't it?
Pencil and mechanical paper, Harry said to his pouch.
Cancel that. Paper and mechanical pencil.
He looked up.
Could you repeat that?
After getting lost another 2 times, Harry felt that he was beginning to understand the basic rule for navigating the ever-changing maze that was Hogwarts. Namely, ask a painting for directions. If this reflected some sort of incredibly deep life lesson, he couldn't figure out what it was. The Green Study Room was a surprisingly pleasant space, with sunlight streaming in from the windows of green-stained glass that showed dragons in calm, pastoral scenes. It had chairs that looked extremely comfortable, and tables that seemed very well suited to study in the company of 1 to 3 friends. Harry couldn't actually walk straight through and out the door the other side. There were bookshelves set into the wall, and he had to go over and read some of the titles, so as to not lose his claim to the Verus family name. But he did it quickly, mindful of the complaint about being slow, and then went out the other side. He was walking down the big, curvy corridor when he heard a young boy's voice cry out. At times like this, Harry had an excuse to sprint all out, with no regards for saving energy, or doing proper warm-up exercises, or worrying about crashing into things. A sudden, frantic flight that nearly came to an equal sudden halt as he almost ran over a group of 6 first-year Hufflepuffs, who were huddled together, looking rather scared and like they desperately wanted to do something, but couldn't figure out what, which probably had something to do with the group of 5 older Slytherins who seemed to be surrounding another young boy. Harry was suddenly rather angry.
"Excuse me!"
shouted Harry at the top of his lungs. It might not have been necessary. People were already looking at him, but it certainly served to stop all the action cold. Harry walked past the cluster of Hufflepuffs towards the Slytherins. They looked down at him with expressions that ranged from anger to amusement to delight. Part of Harry's brain was screaming in panic that these were much older and bigger boys who could stomp him flat. Another part said dryly that anyone caught seriously stomping the boy who lived was in for a whole world of trouble, especially if they were a pack of older Slytherins, and there were 7 Hufflepuffs who saw it, and that the chance of them doing him any permanent damage in the presence of witnesses was nearly 0. The only real weapon the older boys had against him was his own fear, if he allowed that. Then Harry saw that the boy they had trapped was Neville Longbottom. Of course. That settled it. Harry had decided to apologize humbly to Neville, and that meant Neville was his. How dare they! Harry reached out and grabbed Neville by the wrist and yanked him out from between the Slytherins. The boy stumbling in shock as Harry pulled him out and, in nearly the same motion, pushed his own way through the same gap. Harry stood in the centre of the Slytherins where Neville had stood, looking up at the much older, larger, and stronger boys. "Hello," Harry said. "I'm the boy who lived." There was a rather awkward pause. No one seemed to know where the conversation was supposed to go from there. Harry's eyes dropped downwards and saw some books and papers scattered around the floor. Oh, the old game where you let the boy try to pick up his books and then knock them out of his hand again. Harry couldn't remember ever being the object of that game himself, but he had a good imagination, and his imagination was making him furious. Well, once the larger situation was resolved, it would be easy enough for Neville to come back and pick up his materials, provided that the Slytherin stayed too intent on him to think of doing anything to the books. Unfortunately, his straying eyes had been noted. Said the largest of the boys.
"Did you want the widow books?"
"Shut up," Harry said coldly. "Keep them off balance. Don't do what they expect. Don't fall into a pattern that calls for them to bully you. Is this part of some incredibly clever plan that will gain you future advantage, or is it as pointless a disgrace to the name of Salazar Slytherin as it—"
The largest boy shoved Harry Potter hard, and he went sprawling out of the circle of Slytherins into the hard stone floor of Hogwarts. And the Slytherins laughed. Harry rose up in what seemed to him like terribly slow motion. He didn't know yet how to use his wand, but there was no reason to let that stop him, under the circumstances.
"I'd like to pay as many points as it takes to get rid of this person,"
Harry said, pointing with his finger to the largest Slytherin. Then Harry lifted his other hand, said,
"Abracadabra!"
and snapped his fingers. At the word abracadabra, 2 of the Hufflepuffs screamed. Including Neville, 3 other Slytherins leapt desperately out of the way of Harry's finger, and the largest Slytherin staggered back with an expression of shock, a sudden splash of red decorating his face and neck and chest. Harry had not been expecting that. Slowly, the largest Slytherin reached up to his head and peeled off the pan of cherry pie that had just draped itself over him. The largest Slytherin held the pan in his hand for a moment, staring at it, then dropped it to the floor. It probably wasn't the best time in the world for one of the Hufflepuffs to start laughing, but that was exactly what one of the Hufflepuffs was doing. Then Harry caught sight of the note on the bottom of the pan.
"Hold on," Harry said, and darted forward to pick up the note. "This note's for me, I think."
"You?" growled the largest Slytherin. "You are going to look at this!"
shouted Harry, brandishing the note at the older Slytherin.
"I mean, just look at this. Can you believe I'm being charged 30 points for shipping and handling on one lousy pie? 30 points! I'm turning a loss on the deal even after rescuing an innocent boy in distress. And storage fees, conveyance charges, drayage costs. How do you get drayage costs on a pie?"
There was another one of those awkward pauses. Harry thought deadly thoughts at whichever Hufflepuff couldn't seem to stop giggling. That idiot was going to get them hurt. Harry stepped back and shot the Slytherins his best lethal glare.
"Now, go away, or I'll just keep making your existence more and more surreal until you do. Let me warn you, messing with my life tends to make your life a little hairy. Get it?"
In a single, terrible motion, the largest Slytherin whipped his wand out to point at Harry, and in the same instance was hit on the other side of his head by another pie. This one, bright blueberry. The note on this pie was rather large and clearly readable.
You might want to read the note on that pie," Harry observed. "I think it's for you this time."
The Slytherin slowly reached up, took the pie pan, turned it over with a wet gloop that dropped more blueberry on the floor, and read the note that said,
"Warning! No magic may be used on the contestant while the game is in progress. Further interference in the game will be reported to the game authorities."
The expression of sheer bafflement on the Slytherin's face was a look of art. Harry thought that he might be starting to like this game controller.
"Look," Harry said, "you want to call it a day? I think things are spiraling out of control here. How about you go back to Slytherin and I go back to Ravenclaw, and we all just cool down for a bit, okay?"
"I've got a better idea," hissed the largest Slytherin. "How about if you accidentally break all your fingers?"
"How in Merlin's name do you stage a believable accident after making the threat in front of a dozen witnesses, you idiot?"
The largest Slytherin slowly, deliberately reached out towards Harry's hands, and Harry froze in place, the part of his brain that was noticing the other boy's age and strength finally managing to make itself heard, screaming,
"What the heck am I doing?"
"Wait,"
said one of the other Slytherins, his voice suddenly panicky.
"Stop! You shouldn't actually do that!"
The largest Slytherin ignored him, taking Harry's right hand firmly in his left hand, and taking Harry's index finger in his right hand. Harry stared the Slytherin straight in the eyes. Part of Harry was screaming. This wasn't supposed to happen. This wasn't allowed to happen. Grown-ups would never let something like this actually happen. Slowly, the Slytherin started to bend his index finger backwards.
He hasn't actually broken my finger, and it is beneath me to so much as flinch until he does. Until then, this is just another attempt to cause fear.
Stop!
Said the Slytherin who had objected before.
Stop this! It's a very bad idea!
I rather agree, said an icy voice. An older woman's voice.
The largest Slytherin let go of Harry's hand and jumped backwards as if burned.
"Professor Sprout!"
cried one of the Hufflepuffs, sounding as glad as anyone Harry had ever heard in his life. Into Harry's field of vision, as he turned, stalked a dumpy little woman with messily curled grey hair and clothes covered with dirt. She pointed an accusing finger at the Slytherins.
"Explain yourselves,"
she said.
"What are you doing with my Hufflepuffs and—"
She looked at him.
"My fine student, Harry Potter."
"Uh-oh. That's right. It was her class I missed this morning."
"He threatened to kill us,"
blurted one of the other Slytherins, the same one who'd called for a halt.
"What?" Harry said blankly. "I did not. If I was going to kill you, I wouldn't make public threats first."
A third Slytherin laughed helplessly and then stopped abruptly as the other boys shot him deadly glares. Professor Sprout had adopted a rather sceptical expression